How honored are we to have Brian Eno on the show today? His contributions to popular music have been immense, starting out as one of the founding members of Roxy Music in 1971. He was one of the first to use tape looping, a technique to create repeated sound sequences that he later used in his ambient recordings, which began in 1975 with the album Discrete Music. He's long been in demand as a producer with some of the most important bands of the last quarter century, including U2, Talking Heads and David Bowie, and even including the latest albums by Coldplay. That sound when you reboot your PC with Microsoft Windows, that's Brian Eno. His latest project is a 12-part ambient piece called Lux. And I started out our conversation by asking Brian how that project began.
I was asked to make a piece for a Baroque gallery in a palace in Italy, outside Turin, a palace called Venaria. And it's supposed to be a permanent piece that belongs to this gallery and stays in there for at least 5 years. And I studied drawings and photographs and videos of the gallery, and I made a piece at home in my studio in London, took it out to the gallery, played it, and within 5 or 10 minutes knew that it was the wrong piece. And so I then set up a little studio in the gallery so I could hear the piece as I was working on it there. And I started a new version of it. Then I brought that home to London, finished the gallery version, but during working on it, I fell more and more in love with the piece itself. So I then did a slightly different version of it, which became this CD.
And how do you actually work on this music? Is it something that is written in advance, or do you react to it as you're going along?
It's not really written in advance. What I do for this kind of music is I invent a sort of system for generating music, which is essentially a way of permutating some basic musical material that I've started with.
I wanted to ask you about beginnings and ends, because this is music that certainly in the palace and in many ways, people are going to enter in the middle anyway. Is that okay?
That's all fine, yeah. That's actually one of the sort of demands of making music in a place like this. Well, I think what interests me about this kind of composition is that there are quite a few demands. For instance, the gallery itself is very, very echoey. It has an extraordinary live acoustic. So that means there are a lot of things that you can't do. You can't do anything rhythmic. You can't do anything where there are frequent changes of the tonal center or chords changing, because they would all crash over one another. So you have one set of constraints there. Another set of constraints is, as you point out, that the audience hasn't come to listen to music. They're not, well, perhaps some of them have, but many of them will just be walking through. So you have to make an experience for them which is satisfactory, even though they didn't come expecting to listen to a piece of music necessarily. So that's fine. I'm sort of used to doing that, and I'm quite happy with that idea.
I know it was a long time ago, but do you remember when you first decided that you were interested in this music that was going to become part of the landscape, to begin with? I mean, now we call it ambient music, but do you remember your first thoughts about it? I guess we'll be back around the time of Discrete Music.
Yes, I remember quite well, actually. It was a time of my life when I was making a lot of frenetic and frantic music, but I had been listening to composers like Steve Reich and Philip Glass and Terry Riley and so on. So I was very well, in fact, I was probably more well-versed in that world of music than in the world of pop music, actually. And I knew by this time, this was the mid-70s, that there were things you could do in recording studios, and with the sculpting and texturizing of sound that they didn't really know much about. They didn't have the recording studio background. So I felt that there was something I could bring to that approach to composition. which was the understanding of this new medium, the recording studio, I felt I was kind of imagining a new kind of music, which was a music that was very concerned with sonics and with texture. And I wanted to start exploring that. So I started making these long textural pieces. And in fact, it really began for me. I was hit by a taxi in 1975 when I was crossing the road rather carelessly. And I was laying in bed, and a friend of mine, a girl called Judy Nylon, came to visit me. And as she left, I said, "Do you mind putting a record on?" It was a very wet, wintry day, and the rain was hitting the windows. And she put the record on and left. It was a record of Welsh harp music. And she had already gone by the time I realized that she hadn't actually turned it up very loud. I could just hear the loudest notes above the rain. And I couldn't get out of bed, so I was stuck with this, what at first seemed like an unsatisfactory listening situation. And gradually I started to enjoy more and more this mixture of music and the rest of the world.
Well, we have been listening to Lux in the background as we've been talking. But let's listen to a bit of Lux too, out in the open here. We're talking with Brian Eno about the music we're listening to, the Lux album, and that is a bit of Lux 2, one of the four lengthy pieces, which if you divide them up, there are 12 pieces on this new album. Brian, you were talking about the importance of the studio to music in the 20th and 21st century, and of course that's absolutely true. I'd like to talk a little bit about the technology that you have used to make ambient music now and in the past, because in the beginning you used a lot of tape loops, didn't you?
Yes, I did, yeah. And I don't now, because I work primarily digitally, so you don't need tape loops any longer if you're working digitally. And since my tape loops towards the end of my experimentation with them were sometimes 70 or 80 feet long, They were very inconvenient. They used to have to run round series of chair legs round the studio in order to play at all. So I'm quite happy to have passed that particular stage. Though a lot of people are still very nostalgic for analog. I suspect those are the people who never had to actually use it.
Does your work in ambient music, it seems so different from your work with producing with bands, but does it ever have an effect on how you work with bands?
I think it does. I mean, I'm very happy with a lot less than most other people are. So I'm often trying to say to people, leave that out. Take things out. Take it out. So I think I do quite a lot of sculpture in the studio. You know, there's two ways you can record. One is by painting, which is adding things, and one is by sculpting, which is taking things away. And I do both of those, but I think I do more sculpting than a lot of other people. And I'm also, of course, very fascinated and intrigued by the sonic world that is being made. That interests me much more than anything else, really. So I suppose I'm not concentrating really on chords and melody lines and words as much as other producers might, and I'm concerned more with the whole picture, the sonic picture that is being made.
When you're collaborating with somebody, there's an instant or there's a relationship formed, and I'm curious how that collaboration grows for you. How do you make it? Because you collaborate with so many people. We're not just talking about music, but in software and so many of the other things that you work in. You seem to have a knack for it. Is it something, do you enjoy that, or is it an imposition on your ideas?
I only really do things that I enjoy, actually. And if I'm not enjoying them, I try to think of a way of making myself enjoy them, or of changing them so that they become enjoyable. But by and large, whenever I'm working, I'm thinking, Jesus, I'm so lucky that I can get to spend my life doing this. It's absolutely fantastic. So I'm working with... I like being in lots of different musical situations. I love sitting on my own in my studio making music, but I also love working with other people who suddenly have thoughts that are taboo to me and that I have to deal with somehow. I like being tripped up or taken into territories that I'm not so familiar with.
I'd love it if you could tell me a bit about creating the Windows sound, because I think it would be such a challenge to create a meaningful piece of music that is that short. And can you tell me a little bit about that process?
Well, that was a long time ago. That was 1995, I think I did that. At the time, I was working in some very long, slow pieces. Pieces that were on average 35, 40, 50 minutes long and didn't have much going on in them. And then one day I got this letter and it said, we're looking for a piece of music that should be instantly attractive, incisive, revolutionary, offhand. There's a list of adjectives as long as your arm. And then at the end it said, and not more than 3.8 seconds long. And I thought that was so funny that you would try to fit 40 adjectives into 3.8 seconds. And so I thought, oh, that might be worth a try. It felt like making jewelry or something like that after making enormous cathedrals. I'd been doing these huge pieces that were sort of had enormous dimensions to them. They were like cathedrals, if you like. And then suddenly somebody says to me, can you make something the size of an earring or even smaller? And that's what that was like. So I approached it with gusto. I only spent a week on it and I made 83 different pieces during that week. And we ended up choosing one of those. Well, they chose one of those. I didn't.
Did it go back the other way? Did your working on such a small piece affect your thinking about longer pieces?
Well, I suppose so. I mean, I don't... It's very difficult to track where ideas really come from, but it was a reminder to me that I had been becoming quite lazy with time, with thinking about time. You know, I just let these long, long pieces come into being, and suddenly to be reminded that you can work at the microscopic scale and you can make serious musical decisions within a frame of 3 seconds was very refreshing to me.
We've been talking with Brian Eno. His latest work is the much longer 76-minute long piece, Lux, and we will listen to a bit more of Lux 4 as we go out. Brian, thank you very much for your time. Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you very much, David.
Brian Eno, our guest on The World Cafe. A piece of the fourth part of Brian Eno's new ambient music project called Lux, and our thanks to Brian Eno for talking with us today. Back in a moment with more of his music, we get right back here to the World Cafe.